There's big drama over the Virginia budget as Democrats hold hostage the governor's billion-dollar sports stadium proposal in exchange for his approval of left-wing pet projects. But they may be overplaying their hand as the governor seems to strengthen his opposition to marijuana and gambling bills. We'll tell you all about it. Welcome to Speak Up Virginia, equipping you to speak up on the life, family, and freedom issues that matter most to you. From the Family Foundation, I'm your host, Candy Cushman, with our president, Victoria Cobb. Welcome, everybody. Glad to have you with us again. I thought I'd start out today with just giving you some quick updates on good news and bad news. Victoria, I think we'll start out on a sobering note because I did want to mention that I'm looking at stats that really show us at a 10-year high in how abortions have increased. And it looks like we reached over 1 million in 2023. And I think we haven't seen numbers like that in abortion. And that's just even what's reported. We don't even know about what's not reported. But we really haven't seen over 1 million like that in a decade, really. And I just think that's pretty significant when you think about that's in spite of the fact that we have a lot of new states or states putting in more restrictions on abortion, more bans. And I got to think that has to do with the chemical abortion thing.
Yeah, that was my assumption, is that unfortunately this is being pushed as an easier form of abortion. It is not, but people think I don't have to go get surgery. You know, I don't have to physically go somewhere. I just have to get a pill mailed to me. And so, yeah, I think that's significant. And then with regards to the states that are banning it, we see in Virginia, right? So the more restrictive around us, these clinics are moving into Virginia. We have one that moved into Bristol. We have one moving to Danville. So we're gaining clinics. So of course our abortion numbers are going to go up. We obviously hope that ultimately they go down, but that's the reality of where we are right now.
Wow. It just, we really are in a spiritual and physical battle as far as it concerns protecting babies in the womb. Just a spiritual battle over life and death in our culture. It's just becoming more and more intense, it feels like.
Yeah, and I think if people are out there talking about abortion all the time and, you know, the other side is pushing it so hard in their politics and in the culture at large, of course more people are thinking it's a viable option. That's terrible.
Yeah. Well, I did want to give some good news in all of this, and it doesn't quite come to the level of that breadth that we are dealing with the abortion increase, but still it's a bit of good news and I hope it encourages people. And that's that we're seeing, it appears that President Trump, candidate Trump, he appears to be strengthening his position on being for a 15-week ban. Now, he was on a radio show called Sin and Friends in the Morning, and he had this to say, quote, "The number of weeks now people agreeing on 15, and I'm thinking in terms of that, and it'll come out to something that's very reasonable." This is what he was saying. "But people are really, even hardliners are agreeing, seems to be 15 weeks, seems to be a number that people are agreeing at. But I'll make that announcement at the appropriate time." So how do you read that, Victoria?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of things going on. Now, President Trump has sort of his positions on life have shifted a little bit back and forth over time. And so I never put too much into what he's saying at the moment. But I would say this, there is, I mean, what he's saying is, I mean, you know, he's being asked, they want to know about a federal line. Are we going to draw a federal line? And so he's kind of saying, well, this seems to be a reasonable place where people are agreeing. And there's actually a lot of mixed thoughts about whether, you know, folks should come out with a federal line, interestingly enough. In the pro-life movement, there's a little bit, I'll just peel back the curtain a tiny bit. And it's not that there's, you know, these terrible disagreements, but there are strategy divides on whether a federal line at 15 weeks, for example, would be helpful. So for those of us that are in Virginia, of course, we wouldn't mind seeing some line because we're not moving very fast to a good line. So it's helpful in states like Virginia. For places like Texas, it's sort of like, gosh darn, we have a better standard than that. Do we really want something worse at the federal level? And so there's a little bit of strategy. And actually, what's interesting is the most important thing a new president will do will actually be a lot of regulatory things related to chemical abortion, because now chemical abortion is about 60% of the abortion. And that's taking place before that 15-week, before that 15-week. So the most important thing they can do is rein in that FDA and all those sort of times where politics has gone outside of the medicine, you know, where we're not actually looking at this like a real medical issue. And so I'm pleased that he's talking about this. I'm pleased that he's considering coming down on this. And that I mean, you know, of course, 15 weeks isn't everything, but it's good that he's not abandoning his pro-life position despite the politics, because he was kind of harsh on pro-lifers right after the midterms.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what I mean by he's shifted around. He kind of made it sound like, oh, we, you know, it was our issue that lost the midterms and we should just. And so a lot of us kind of panicked, like, where is this guy going on the life issue? So I think it is good news, you know, generally.
Well, when he says he's making an announcement soon, is this kind of a trial balloon thing? That's what I was
wondering. There are a lot of trial balloons out there. You know, every day we're reading about a new potential vice president, you know, to run alongside of him. So, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he's kind of pushing it out to get some reaction. But there's also so many conversations behind the scenes of, like, what do we want out of Congress? What do we want if we get a president in our direction on life? Like, that is conversations that are happening pretty aggressively and regularly in the pro-life movement. So,
all right. Well, that is fascinating. Yeah. Thank you for enlightening us on that.
Sure.
Some of you may remember our reporting from last week where we talked about the huge UVA blow up over their $20 million investment in so-called DEI.
Is that an investment? Is that fair?
Yeah.
Anyway, keep going.
That's up for debate, but let's just say they're $20 million payments to so-called DEI experts.
Probably better.
Well, the good news is that the Youngkin administration seems to be delving more into the details of how universities are paying for these things, what they are giving to students, how much time is being spent on this indoctrination that's happening in the name of DEI. And so it turns out that through the Department of Education, the State Department of Education, they are doing this audit of some of the curriculum. So it's starting with an audit of syllabi from George Mason University and VCU, Virginia Commonwealth University.
Yeah, so apparently both of these universities are planning DEI-related coursework or course mandates for students. So a Youngkin spokesman basically said that they were responding to parents and students that have concerns that these courses are, and this was the quote, a thinly veiled attempt to incorporate the progressive left's groupthink on Virginia students. So first of all, if he is responding to parents and students, good for them. They're standing up and speaking out and saying, like, what is going on at our schools? So I was thrilled to see that. You know, and we've heard about these things. We've heard about these crazy courses. You know, I think I haven't heard as much lately, but I guess it's still, you know, it's still absolutely going on. And I'm glad that our governor is really going after this stuff. I think people would really hope that we'd have a governor that would stand up and kind of put an end to critical race theory and these kind of DEI expeditions,
yeah,
I guess, that these schools go on.
I mean, let's just think about this. If this was totally allowed to just run amok and universities use taxpayer dollar money, tuition money to really fund this brainwashing, this indoctrination, which really is Marxist, what is at stake? What is the harm, really, to having an entire generation taught that we're in a system of oppressors and victims?
I just sit there and think people who grow up and their primary identity is as a victim, like, how do they flourish in life? I just literally think if you're on the lookout for how everybody else is harming you, this is not going to be a leader. This is not going to be a person that then becomes someone who brings others along with you. You're just, like, you know, in this mentality. So I think it's terrible. And of course, it really heightens racial divides, because in most cases they're talking about racial groups, you know, one's the oppressor, one's the oppressed. So it absolutely is not getting us to a place where we view each person with their own dignity and their own uniqueness,
yeah,
and made by God, and we're all, you know, in an equal place. And I just, it's everything backwards about what,
yeah,
we really want for Virginia.
I have concerns with putting this filter. I think it makes us lose each other's humanity, because we're looking through this filter at what category do you fit in. And also, I think it turns people into being about power. You know, well, I have to figure out who are the oppressors, who are the victims, who do I need to align with, instead of relating to each other just as human beings, you know.
Yeah.
So it is disturbing. And like we said before, you see the impact on moving from a merit-based system in companies and universities to this kind of Marxist arrangement, and you actually have bad outcomes with that. So,
and I feel like we have to remind people that in some of these situations where they've been teaching this whole philosophy, certainly we saw in a K-12 situation where it's not just even race. It's if you come from a two-parent married family, you are privileged. If you, and yeah, sure, it is a privilege, but it's a good kind of privilege. It's a blessing. We want people to aspire to that, right? Or if your parents are military, do you remember this? There was a bingo,
yeah,
game.
Yes,
like,
I remember the bingo game.
If you're from a military home, somehow you're privileged. So anyway, we just have to remember the craziness of even how they describe who the victims and who the oppressors are. It's not even always just the race issue.
So I'm glad our governor is shedding some light on this, that this is still being exposed. So we'll bring you more news about that as we get it. But on to other news about the governor. I personally find this whole budget battle over the sports stadium, which is becoming a key factor in this, fascinating to watch. There's just a lot of power struggles happening over it and a lot of hardball being played. Do you want to talk to us about that? And I will mention some of the issues we care about are getting tangled up in the whole thing as well.
Yeah, for sure. So this isn't just about sports, although for a long time I've sat here and thought, how does our Commonwealth not have a single professional team that is actually based in Virginia? So I've had this, and maybe Youngkin's been thinking the same thing, you know, maybe like it's a frustration for him too. I don't know if moving them right out of D.C. into Virginia makes them a Virginia team, right? Like, I don't know if that solves the issue. But anyway,
this
is a passion point of
his. I would like to have a baseball stadium.
I want a baseball team so badly. I think that would be awesome. But anyway, all that to say, sports aside and my sports enthusiasm aside, this is a passion project of the governor's. It is a $2 billion sports stadium that he wants to bring into Alexandria, and he wants to pull two of the teams that are based in D.C. and actually have them.
I think it was hockey and baseball, if I remember
baseball, hockey and basketball.
Okay.
So baseball, we're still not getting the
about
Nationals.
Baseball.
But I would love to have, I would love to have baseball. But anyway, nevertheless, but there's been just a lot of drama around this because, of course, if he puts out, this is what I really want, of course, his opponents, and there really are sort of battles, they're going to immediately go, oh, that's what you want. Let me tell you how this is going to go. And one in particular has been, there's been a lot of drama between him and Senator Louise Lucas because, you know, she's one of the leaders of the radical left wing of the party, and she has decided to make a big spectacle about blocking this proposal that he wants.
Yeah, let's just look at this. We're going to put up just one of the taunting messages that she's been putting out there, especially on X, or as you know, as used to be Twitter. She's been putting out these ridiculous images, basically bragging that she's single-handedly blocking the governor's wish, and she seems to be taking pride in that. So we've put up on the screen right now one of those memes of her waving. Well, it looks like somebody stuck her face on an existing image of someone basically standing over a grave waving a peace sign. So now it's Senator Lucas standing over a grave that has the stadium on it.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. So we've been seeing a lot of parading around on that. Why do you think what is she doing? What is she getting out of this?
Well, I mean, she has quite a Twitter X presence. I always, you know, I'm always going to call it Twitter. I'm sorry, Elon.
Well,
but
it's
anyway.
Weird to say X presence.
Anyway, she's always had quite, I mean, she's just, that's her forum for, and it's always kind of snarky and whatever. But, you know, I think, you know, this is about power, right? Like, she wants to be the most powerful player in the Commonwealth, and that's been clear for a long time. And so, you know, if she can, you know, sort of tell the governor, you know, that this is really within her control, this is everything that she wants. I mean, she likes these kind of battles. I think she thrives in these moments.
Yeah.
So that's just the reality of it.
Well, we should clarify that the reason she has so much power is because she's over the Finance Committee, right?
Yeah.
So she and other Democrats have basically started playing hardball, and I would say almost like attempted blackmail, trying to strong arm the governor into signing things they want, like commercialized marijuana, higher minimum wage law, just all of their left-wing pet projects. They've been putting demands out there. What are your thoughts on that? Just, you know, for him, if he wants the stadium deal to go through, well, you got to sign my bill.
Yeah, I mean, I've been completely following this closely because, yeah, our issues are totally intertwined in this battle over the stadium, which normally isn't something we would
necessarily.
Like, this isn't really our issue. But I have been concerned all throughout session. I was concerned really that that he, and this is, you know, I say this symbolically, I'm not saying this seriously, but that he's negotiating with terrorists, that they're, you know, that they're going, here's my,
it
you know, my demand.
Like,
I mean, I'm just, it really scares me because, you know, you can't negotiate with some of these people. And it feels a little like that. And I was worried because, yes, marijuana and also the gambling issue are particularly because they have revenue. You know, that's what this is about. This is about money. And where are we going to get money? Where are we going to spend it? And those bills in particular are a revenue source that the Democrats want, despite the vice and despite the harm that it does to families. And I know the governor knows that those two things harm families. So I'm just hoping that, you know, that he would stay strong on all of that, despite wanting this arena. But it's been a challenge.
Well, it does look like maybe they're hugely overplaying their hand. You know, at least at the time that we taped this, the governor was getting, you know, I think he's getting pretty frustrated with this and even kind of making a few signals about vetoing the entire budget. And, you know, even if that happens, doesn't happen, he was saying things about that he doesn't support the marijuana bill, the commercialization of marijuana, also these slot machines going into convenience stores. He actually seems to be digging in his heels more, especially on the things we care about. You know, the pot shop on every corner kind of bill, the so-called skill games, which is the slot machines and the convenience stores. And, of course, that was something that was supported by Senator Lucas, the slot machine thing. So let's just listen to one of the governor's clips where he seems to be digging in.
There's two visions for Virginia. My vision, which is more jobs, more opportunity, more prosperity, make sure we reduce the cost of living and we invest in those critical elements that support that. Their vision for Virginia, candidly, is let's tax everybody as high as we possibly can. Let's put a pot shop on every corner and let's put a slot machine in every 7-Eleven.
Yeah, so I love actually that in this particular clip, Governor Youngkin is basically mirroring what our policy guys have been saying in session. It was really encouraging, I think, for us to see him even using sort of the phraseology that we've been using, you know, that we don't want a pot shop on every corner. We don't want, you know, slot machines in the local 7-Eleven. Like, you know, I feel bad when we use brands because, you know, who knows if 7-Eleven is literally the one going to do it. But the convenience store, you know, I feel bad. But anyway, so I found it very encouraging that he's speaking out on this. Now, of course, vetoing a budget is almost never done. I mean, an entire veto of a budget, it would be a pretty shocking thing for a governor to do. But it would start from scratch, and it would kind of allow his arena to come back in, and he could, okay, you know, work it from scratch. So it'll be interesting to see what he does.
All right. Well, do you want to make any predictions how this is going to play out, especially on our bills that we care about? Not our bills, but the ones we're concerned about, the slot machines and the expanded pot shops in every corner. What?
I mean, I definitely feel like he is getting more and more outspoken against these things. I really think he had a strong press event on the marijuana. So I feel very confident he's going to veto that marijuana and that that is not going to be at play. I want to feel equally as confident on the slot machines. I think we're tracking that way. But again, that it's so tempting when the money is the issue to kind of go, oh, well, that's, you know, that ship has sailed and we have casinos and what's, you know, what's the harm? So I just pray that he understands that this is a unique harm, a new gambling situation. Yeah. It's a lot worse. But, you know, he is talking about the budget as being completely backwards. That's kind of been his phraseology. He's talking about a backwards budget.
Well, it really is.
It is. And what, you know, what he in particular is highlighting is the fact that he originally proposed a 12% income tax cut. And he did have accompanying sales tax and use tax increases, right? So there was kind of a give and a take in there. And what they did is they took out the cut and left in the increases. And so he's going, look, this isn't something that Virginians agree on. This is really a massive hike. And so we'll just have to see.
It's like he's trying to negotiate and they're just wiping that out and taking it to the wall. So it's an interesting process, but that would be outrageous. And if they just don't offer any cuts and just expand taxes, we don't need that right now. So
no, that would be pretty terrible.
I'm glad that he's calling that out.
Yeah.
All right. Well, if you want to weigh your voice into this, make sure you visit our governor's veto page on familyfoundation.org. And, you know, I don't think it's a bad idea to go ahead and encourage the governor. Please do veto the commercialization of marijuana and the slot machines. You know, just go ahead and put your voice in there. It's a key time to do so. Well, it's that time again. Time for our Inconceivable Moments Award. This is where we're featuring examples of the absolute lunacy and craziness that happens when cultural leaders try to give guidance completely apart from biblical principles. And we're calling this the Liberals' Most Inconceivable Moments Award.
Inconceivable!
All right, well, I'm sure a lot of you probably caught the news about Kamala Harris becoming the first ever sitting vice president in the United States to actually go and ceremonially visit an abortion clinic, and not just any abortion clinic, a huge one, and really kind of pump that up and celebrate it like it was something to be normalized and glorified. Now, this was all part of her and President Biden's Restore Row, you know, little road tour thing they're going around the country doing. But it just, what struck me is it was so hyped up. It was like, you know, it was like a head of state visiting a foreign embassy. It just kind of had that kind of touting going on. And you just kind of felt that agenda that they're really trying to force this on us, that we need to accept and celebrate this. And like I said, it was at a big Planned Parenthood in St. Paul, Minnesota. Let's just watch a clip from that.
I'm here at this healthcare clinic to uplift the work that is happening in Minnesota as an example of what true leadership looks like. And please do understand that when we talk about a clinic such as this, it is absolutely about healthcare and reproductive healthcare. So everyone get ready for the language, uterus. That part of the body needs a lot of medical care from time to time.
All right, Victoria, two things here that I really want you to comment on. Obviously, I know you want to comment on her statement that it absolutely is healthcare. And then I felt like she was talking down to all of us about the word uterus. You know, she's like, you're going to hear this word a lot. You better get used to it. It just kind of has that tone of talking down to us as if we're not all educated on what this word means. But she had the audacity to also talk about that as, you know, medical care.
Yeah, this whole thing. Okay, so let's just start with, this clip just reminds me why her popularity is really low. The condescension that she just feels the need to express in this sort of way. But first of all, let's take apart the healthcare thing. We all know this is not healthcare. It is the furthest thing from healthcare. But she does something that they do all the time, which is they mix in real healthcare, and then they sort of, you know, like minimize that we're talking about abortion by mixing in real healthcare, some of which the clinic doesn't actually even do, right? So she actually literally mentions breast cancer screenings. Guess what? Go to their list of services right on their website and they don't list breast cancer screenings. And that has been a thing that they have used. The left has used this all over the place and it has been debunked in almost every case. I don't know of a single abortion clinic that has been found to do this. There may be one, but it is certainly not this one in their list of services. So I'm so over this. We pretend this is healthcare and then we mention some real healthcare that isn't done there in order to not mention what is actually done there. And then she goes to this word uterus, right? Like, oh, like they always want to treat us like those of us that disagree with this, we're just a bunch of prudes or something. Like as if we're, you know, we can't have real conversations. No, we just actually really disagree. But what she doesn't do, and this may be a little bit much for some of our listeners, but what she doesn't do is go, let's talk about them ripping limb to limb a child. No, but that's actually what we're talking about. But let's just talk about uterus. Like, this is just the baloney that they keep putting out there. And this whole thing reminded me of when Northam went to a clinic in order to get an abortion bill signed. He like did it in front of an abortion clinic and it was this whole ordeal. And that was a really rough moment for us in Virginia to think that our governor feels good enough to go sign a bill with all of these abortionists all around them. So anyway, the whole thing is just utterly heinous. And of course, you know, none of this even talks about, you know, she doesn't talk about the surgery. She doesn't talk about, I mean, just.
Yeah. Or how. You know,
or gender-affirming services, which are really, we know, actually mutilating children.
Sending kids down that road, or even the cross-sex hormones.
I mean, that's what they're doing. Yeah. I mean, it's all in the same direction.
Or the fact that a lot of times when they do these later-term abortions, they actually have to sit there and repiece the baby's body parts.
That
I don't want to get too gruesome, but that's what
horrible.
They do. Yeah. We won't go too
But she
down
doesn't
that.
Talk about that. Like, she
you
doesn't
don't see that part.
She didn't like walk up and say, this is the actual process. Let's watch it. Because you know what? America would have been horrified. That's why that doesn't happen.
Well, and that's why I think it's fair to call this a gross form of hypocrisy at the highest level. And it only got worse from there because, you know, she used this phrase that she has been using a lot on this road tour. And even for the last few years, we just hear her saying this over and over. And it's basically this weird justification of abortion as this is the way you avoid a painful miscarriage. That's the insinuation, or not even insinuation, that's what she's putting out there. Let's just listen to another clip from that.
The stories abound. I have heard stories of and have met with women who had miscarriages in toilets.
All right, Victoria, would you care to explain what is wrong with that statement?
Okay. First of all, she clearly does not seem to understand the difference between a miscarriage and an abortion. And that happens all the time. And it's and I think she does know the difference, right? Like, this is an intentional, they typically intentionally confuse these two things because so many women do experience the difficulty of miscarriage and have to go through that. And so it's sort of like, let me just rope all this together so that every woman feels like they're connected to abortion in some way. And so it's a really horrific thing. But basically,
and miscarriage is unintentional.
Yes, it's unintentional. It's a really unfortunate situation where your baby does not live, but it's not by your own hand and by your own doing. And by the way, when you have a miscarriage, that isn't that you may have to go in and have a doctor handle that, but that is not abortion. That is not an intentional killing of an unborn child, right, which is what abortion is.
Right. All right. Well, check out these words from a Planned Parenthood document that describes the second stage of chemical abortion. And let me know what you think about what she's saying about miscarriage. So it describes the second stage of a chemical abortion as, quote, "This medicine causes cramping and bleeding that empties your uterus." You know, it's super painful to talk about this right now, but that sounds pretty much like what she's describing when she talks about, you know, a woman experiencing this on a toilet, right?
Yeah, this is what she's saying. So you've got Planned Parenthood that's literally describing something. And do you want to, I mean, they're describing chemical abortion. And so she's making it sound like, and this is just the hard reality of what's going on here. But she's basically saying that an abortion is going to prevent having to deal with a miscarriage, but literally, that is what an abortion does, is it creates an intentional situation where you experience all the same pain you could experience in a miscarriage.
So, just to drive it home, she's saying we need abortion to avoid this, while except Planned Parenthood has documents that actually instruct how to do this very thing.
Yes.
And in fact, it goes so far as this columnist from the Washington Stand brought to light. The Planned Parenthood website with these documents actually goes so far to tell women to, quote, sit on the toilet. I mean, how more hypocritical can you get?
This is what we've been saying about chemical abortion for a long time. This is turning the woman into the abortionist and her home into the abortion clinic. That she has to have an abortion all by herself, and it literally plays out in one of the worst possible ways, and they're making it sound like that somehow that an abortion is going to avoid a miscarriage.
Yeah. So let's just look at the reality. That's why I think it's fair to call this gross hypocrisy, to call Vice President Harris out on this. I mean, we've talked about before, we have even had Hollywood stars talking about, like Britney Spears, how painful a chemical abortion was.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question, and I think I've mentioned this before. If you have any question, just go watch the Unplanned movie. It will lay this out in cold reality. And the idea that our vice president is intertwining these terms and acting like one would be painful and one will be healthcare,
yeah,
is utterly, utterly egregious, because people are going to hear that. And that's why we have, back to the beginning of the show, higher numbers of abortion, because this kind of presentation about abortion is how the American public finds out about abortion.
Yes. And when you think about it, it's like Kamala Harris inadvertently pointed out the obvious here, that we tout chemical pills, our nation touts chemical pills as a medical advancement, but she herself is describing a form of barbarity, a woman experiencing something painful on a toilet, that this so-called advancement actually brings us right back to this form of barbarity. And I couldn't help think of C.S. Lewis talking about how he's seen progress and development in an egg, and it was called going bad.
Leave it to him to always have just such amazing quotes for the situation of the day. And, you know, so, yeah, when our leaders are the ones propagating these falsehoods, making these comparisons, making these just complete and utter false deception of what abortion is, like it's going to, this is why we have the abortion problem we have in America, is because not only is Planned Parenthood doing it, but we literally have people who, by their very title, by their very office, lend credibility to something that is completely dangerous, harmful, that women, I mean, talk to women who have had chemical abortions. They will tell you the real experience.
And that's why we will never stop spreading the truth about this. We are never going to give up defending life. And we know all of you are alongside with this. And that's why we're going to have a lot of work to do talking about this constitutional amendment that we're going to probably have a 2-year battle on. But we'll save that for another day. In the meantime, you know what this means. We've got to give Vice President Kamala Harris the Inconceivable Award for trying to normalize barbarity in the name of medical care. Well, thanks for joining us, everybody. We really appreciate knowing you're out there alongside with us, fighting these hard issues with us and supporting us along the way and speaking up, raising your voices. Remember, we are stronger when we speak together. We'll see you next time.